Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
You are listening to the Women's Podcast, brought to you by Green and Black's Organic Chocolate. Discover a different kind of dark.
You're listening to the Irish Times Women's Podcast. I'm Roisin Ingle. How are you all doing? Look, I know it's been tough, it continues to be tough, but good news, McDonald's is opening next week. So for some of you, I know that'll be something to look forward to. And on a more serious note, hopefully the news regarding COVID cases and deaths is getting slightly better. The lockdown restrictions are starting to gradually lift, with some shops opening soon and a bit more life about the place, I suppose. And on this podcast, I have to say we're very much in celebration mode, because this very episode marks our 400th show since we started the podcast back in September 2015. I'm going to get JJ to put in a big cheer there. Yeah, it's 5 years, can you believe it, since a whole load of women in the Irish Times, women like Una Mullally, Kitty Holland, Circa Pollock, Kathy Sheridan, Brenda Fitzsimons, a load of us sat around the boardroom table and began to imagine what a podcast dedicated to the lives of women and the issues that we needed to hear discussed might look and sound like. We are so happy that actor, writer and all-round joy bringer Amy Huberman joined us, and more than 250 Irish Times readers and subscribers and podcast listeners on Zoom last Saturday night to help us celebrate this milestone. And I was thinking back to 2015, and it was really only a few months after we'd started that we were named Best New Irish Podcast of that year by iTunes, which was a fantastic accolade and such great encouragement. At the time, Kathy Sheridan was the main presenter and I was on producing duties. And right away, we featured women such as Marion Keyes, Erica Young, Margaret Atwood. Margaret has been on twice, and Elizabeth Gilbert. And we were really keen to cover a whole range of topics, everything from politics to makeup to feminism, relationships, fashion, health, and so much more. I said at the time, when we started the podcast, the reason we started it was because we had identified a real and disappointing gap in the market, not just in podcasting, which was sort of burgeoning at that point, but in broadcasting in Ireland generally. And it was something that was highlighted by the Hearing Women's Voices report, which came out that year. It was a study by Dublin City University and the National Women's Council of Ireland. And the study found, not perhaps surprisingly, that male voices dominated on Irish radio stations. Now, I'm not sure if that study was done now, how much better things would be, but maybe DCU might look into doing another one if there's anyone listening from there. But I do know that in the 5 years since that report, the Women's Podcast has really tried to fill that gap. And we wouldn't have been able to do it if there wasn't the appetite out there for the subjects we cover and the stories we tell. So we want to thank you, our listeners, and a lot of new ones have come on board since the pandemic, for staying with us, for getting in touch, for just being so engaging and brilliant, and letting us know that what we are trying to do on this podcast matters. The audience has been building and we are very grateful for that. We've been through a lot together when you think about it. I mean, back at the beginning, the whole Waking the Feminist thing kicked off, which was a fantastic story to be able to tell over our first episodes. And then all the way through to Repeal the Eighth, which was a big part of our work for such a long time. And that anniversary is coming up, 2 years, I can't believe it. And in between, we had Donald Trump with the whole Me Too story coming out as well. And we've had a lot of crack in between. And just thinking back to all of those things, I want to say a few thank yous and pay a few tributes. And the first one has to be to my co-host, Kathy Sheridan, who has just been the best fun to work with and always a steadying, insightful influence on everything we do. And Kathy, we can't wait to get back into the studio with you. I know you're listening in Kildare and we're sending you loads of love. Thanks also to our wonderful producer, Jennifer Ryan, who is off at the moment on maternity leave. And when Jennifer went off on maternity leave, the amazing dynamo that is Suzanne Brennan came on board and she's been responsible for securing some great guests and being a real innovator in terms of social media. So Suzanne, thank you so much. Thanks to Declan Conlon and Paddy Logue, who lead the podcast team in the Irish Times and bring all those other excellent podcasts like Inside Politics, Worldview, Added Time, and more recently, Confronting Corona to you. And one other person I really need to mention is someone who does so much work behind the scenes, our sound man, or as we call him, our very sound man, JJ Vernon. JJ knows where all the bodies are buried. Let's put it like that. He also knows what to keep in and what to leave out. He's seen us laugh and cry over the 5 years. And we're so grateful for your professionalism, skill and fun. Thanks, JJ. It's always been such a fantastic team effort with contributions from women in almost every section of the Irish Times, including our book clubbers, Niamh Towey, Bernice Harrison and Anne Ingle. Thank you to the Irish Times, too, for understanding that this space needed to be held for women and for giving us this platform. And there's also so many great people working in marketing and advertising in the Irish Times who support us and have supported us since the beginning. And to mark the 400th episode, we wanted to do something special. So we only went and joined Instagram. I know, can't believe we weren't there already. And we are there now on Instagram at IT Women's Podcast. And we want you to go and try and be in with the chance of winning some gorgeous chocolate from our brilliant sponsors, Green and Blacks. And all you have to do is go to at IT Women's Podcast on Instagram, follow us, like us, do all that, and then tag three of your friends and get them to follow us as well. And then hopefully we'll be winging some chocolate to you if you do that. I think it's really fitting that we're launching our Instagram page on the episode with Amy Huberman, who has to be said is a bit of a queen of Irish Instagram. She's got loads of followers and we're all laughing along with her witty, quirky Insta take on life with her young son, daughter and husband, who you might have heard of, rugby legend Brian O'Driscoll. And she's kept us laughing, especially during these strange times. Amy, as you know, is an actor. You'll know her from stuff like Moon Boy and The Clinic and Striking Out and Cold Feet. You'll know her from comedy shows like Your Bad Self, from her books. She's written two novels. And most recently, she wrote and starred in her own hilarious comedy drama, Finding Joy, which not surprisingly has been an utter joy to watch. She came on Zoom to talk about everything, really, about growing older. Ah, look, she's still a young one. But she talked about how growing older has made her less afraid. She talked about life in lockdown with Bod and about her Jewish-Irish heritage, which is something that's very important to her. And as you'll also know, a bit more trivially, Amy has lovely hair. So she had some hair tips for us all at this very desperate time. We're so grateful she joined us and grateful to you too, all our listeners, for sticking with us until we reached 400 episodes. And we hope that you'll be with us for the next 400. Go to Instagram at IT Women's Podcast. Follow us, like us, tag your friends and enjoy this celebration with Amy Huberman. I started by asking Amy about life in lockdown.
Lockdown life is, I was trying to think about it in my head today and I was like, it's something that's really hard to define and describe. And I feel like it's like trying to pick up a bar of wet soap. Like every time you think you've got a measure on it and you go down, you try and ascertain something of what you feel like it is or how you're feeling, it just changes and shifts and I don't know what it is, because at times I think it's horrific and the worst thing in the world, and it is obviously, it, you know, globally, and it's everybody's in a state of anxiety and panic. And then other times, I think for survival, you just I seem to kind of dip into a slipstream of just head down, shutting it all off just to get through the day. And a lot of it, I kind of, you know, enjoying the home time. Other times I get really frustrated. I get frustrated at myself because I feel like I'm being impatient with my kids and the family stuff. And I know that's just my frustrations. And, you know, so many of my friends were like, how are you going to manage it? Because you just love going out. And I don't mean going out, like into nightclubs or whatever, but You know, when sometimes people, you know, get old and they're like, oh, I just love to move to the countryside and have a quieter life. We moved closer into town. I was like, I just want busy. I want to go just say, talk to everyone in the shops. And that's the bit I'm really missing. And I don't know if I'm worrying a little bit about becoming a bit more antisocial. And I think maybe that's just a survival technique that you do. You kind of have to close off, you know, some of the doors a little bit in your head, or instead of leaving them open and just and expending too much of your energy wanting, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I mean, like, there's certainly things now where I'm not craving the interaction anymore. I'm worried that it's going to scare me a little bit, that you just get used to your unit. But listen, you know, everything just changes and you get on with it and you get onto the new normal. But do you know what? It's settled into something now. I think the first week or two, I felt so overwhelmed with anxiety. I felt like this rising panic. And I think it was just the unknown and the talk of it. And that was when I was watching the news, because we didn't know anything. We didn't know, and it was unfolding. We were all learning at the same time. Whereas now I don't really read much news or listen to it. I do. I kind of get maybe the headlines and the bulletins, but I'm not looking for feed. I'm not scrolling for news. And that for me is a bit of a survival technique. Sorry, Irish Times. I mean, I will obviously look at your headlines. But no, I think it was nearly a need initially, where I just couldn't not look. I needed to look just to kind of get your head around it. But now I don't have that sense of panic. I have sadness and I have worry, but it's not a panicky worry. And then, you know, there's just, you know, fatigue with it, I think. And then there's the flip side of it where I feel really grateful and I feel very, very lucky. But, you know, we're dealing with all of our emotions. We've never been through this before. And there will be kind of probably an assorted box of emotions that we will feel, and that may feel different from day to day. And I think it's okay to own them and sort through them, instead of going, do you know what, it could be worse. And obviously it could be worse, but I also think it would be strange if you weren't processing how you felt or how your family felt, or missing life, or, you know, worried about your kids or my parents. And my dad is in a nursing home. That's why I avoid the news, because the nursing home news is not particularly sunny at the moment, and it's incredibly sad, you know, the stories that are coming out of you know, all of that. And it's a scary, scary time. So I think it's just I'm like a Nutribullet of emotions. I'm like, I feel great when I feel, you know, in good form, and I run with that. And then I can sense the days, and I can't shake it, the days that are not great days. So yeah, a week could be a blend, a Nutribullet blend of a million different emotions. And then, yeah, it's just, time is going slowly and time is racing, and it's a really strange time.
Now, we've already, before we've hardly begun, had a question about your puppy.
Oh yeah.
Anyone who follows you on Instagram is very interested in Phoebe. Phoebe, is that her name?
Yeah, Phoebe. Oh God, Phoebe. That's been an intense time. And you know, people have been so lovely. And this, you know, there's times outside of all of this where I love social media and I don't, and then I'm sick of social media. I think we all kind of go through that. But it's been such a lovely tool of connection. My screen time has absolutely gone up, like it has, because the connection. And I have loads of people who are giving me tips about the dog, which I'm loving. And I've had dog trainers. There's a dog trainer who lives apparently around the corner from me. And she's like, I saw you out on the road with the dog, and do you need any help? I was like, yes. But we've been talking about getting a dog for about 2 years, and we had basically lied to the kids and said they'd have to be like 10 and 12, but we didn't want to tell them that we were probably going to get one sooner. And I've been in touch with this woman, Lynn, who runs Milo's Rescue Mission. It's a really small rescue center in Greystones. We actually started chatting on Instagram Live months ago. And she was like, we wanted you to do something with us, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I was chatting to her off that. And I just said, if there is any little pups. And then Phoebe came in. And yeah, it was just before everything, the shit got real. The shit got real when we took her home as well, because, oh, Jesus. It was basically shit everywhere. Sorry about that. There was shit in the world. There was shit in the house. There was shit everywhere.
I'm sorry for, I think Valda's still eating her dinner, but it's okay, Valda. Don't worry.
I do apologize. Yeah, no, that was intense. And I was like, God, it's not like having a baby. Babies wear nappies. This is insane. But do you know what? She's kind of settled this week. There was a few weeks where we don't know where she came from or what kind of like a start she had in life. So, although, again, the power of social media, we think we found her sister. So this woman messaged me and she goes, our dog has to be your dog's relative because they lost their teeth the same week and they look exactly the same. So we're convinced that they're sisters.
I have to ask, have you heard the dog outside? Is that annoying
no.
people? My producer is nodding. She's like, yeah, Roisin, what the? I just have the window open. It's such a balmy night.
And I have the window. I can't even hear okay. the dog. So you're
if the dog's noises are coming in, it just adds to the atmosphere. I hope you don't
mind.
Your
dog?
Now, no, I don't have a dog. We have a hamster. It's sitting over there. His name is Mocha. That's about the height of it.
That's fine. That'll do.
But listen, another thing people have come in straight away with is we want to talk about baking. You're baking, Bod's baking. Tell us what's happening.
Bod the baker. Bod the baker. It's actually, Brian, I've never seen, I didn't know he was as domesticated as he is. Now, he does cook and he likes cooking. But so one day I came into the kitchen and he was making tea brack. I was like,
tea brack?
He was soaking sultanas and in tea to then make a tea brack. And I was like, I didn't know that people under a certain age made tea brack. But anyway, he made the tea brack. Turns out it's flipping gorgeous and tea brack needs to be the new banana bread. But anyway, he was baking. I was like, I need to get in this. And as well, it was something else to do with the kids and for the 18 billion hours there are in the day to fill. So I'm not great because I don't love cooking. It's mostly out of like need and necessity. And if Brian is away, I'll feed the kids something that they like that's quite simple. And then I might just have a bowl of cereal, which is not probably not great. Or just eat their food. But they just love pasta things. And I eat it. I don't want to eat that. So I would get quite lazy with that kind of thing. But do you know what? I've kind of enjoyed the cooking. I got roped into doing a Kevin Dundon cook-along the other night. He saw my bad banana bread.
No, can I just say, I don't know if any of you, wave your hands if you saw Amy's bad banana bread on Instagram. I was actually quite delighted because I look at Amy, I'm just thinking, oh my God, she's so amazing. She's talented. And then I saw her banana bread. I was like, yes, excellent. She's crap at making banana bread.
What an absolute rookie. This is again how little baking I did, because I was like, right, I've done it. It looks good. And then as soon as it came out of the oven, I just bashed it out of the tin. And I didn't realize that you needed to wait at least half an hour to let it cool down. So anyway, learned that. And I made a decent one the next time. So it wasn't as bad.
That's good. And what did you make with Kevin Dundon? Just whatever was in your fridge kind of thing?
Yeah, he had messaged me and asked me, did I want to do it? And I was like, do you realize? Do you know what with me? It's like I'm not prepped enough and I don't know enough. So then it catches up with me. The kitchen is a mess. I haven't done enough. And I talk too much as well. I was like, oh, Jesus. And he was like, he was way ahead of me. But he just said it was going to be whatever was in the kitchen, which I thought was kind of quite scary for him.
Amy, people are coming up with some really good questions and two really important ones. The first one is, how come Amy's hair hasn't gone to seed like the rest of us?
Jesus.
And I think you need to just account for yourself there, because we, you know, I could have done a messy updo tonight. I think I'm doing quite well, but thank you.
I think it's because I'm washing my hair so little that if I wash it once a week, it goes, oh my God, we better behave, because we want her to wash us again. That was gross. But I did the roots. Do you know what? I'm blonde, so I don't get massive roots. I've got a couple of grays under there, but they're usually kind of hidden because they kind of fall under that side. but I probably only get my hair colored about 3 times a year. So I like, I'm getting away with it on that front.
And listen, I bet somebody, because I know I was thinking, what actual tool do you use to do your little curly things?
No, but there? I got it only recently and I flipping love it. I got the...
Is it easy though? Is it easy to do?
So easy. And I'm not good at doing hair. I've got a curl in my hair. So the back of it is just pure fuzz, like pure fuzz. But this, I'll show you what it is.
Oh, this is brilliant. I hope somebody's, all of you are interested in hair. I know you don't all have long hair, but you might know somebody who will find this useful.
This is the Babyliss Hot Tools. And
can I just say, it looks like something else that sales have increased of, totally, if you don't mind me saying.
Totally does. So I got, imagine you just lost your mind. I did too much rosé and I was like, Roisin, 300 people. Actually, maybe it's not Babyliss. Oh no, it's called Hot Tools. I did have a
Hot Tools, one, yeah.
But there's different hot tools. It's one of those hot tools. But it's got a wider girth, Roisin, than a lot of the other hot tools. And that makes it easier to curl your hair. So
sorry, it's too early for girth.
Oh, Jesus, girth early. Such a funny word. Anyway, it's a wide girth tool.
Okay, so you said that.
It's easier to curl your hair with it.
Okay, that's good. I'm sorry I asked. And the other thing is, that this is a really interesting question because I think in some ways women are getting the raw deal in doing loads of things, but somebody did ask about the division of household chores. So what's the story in your house?
I hate to sound like an arsehole. I really do. But I genuinely cannot complain on that front. Brian, as I said, I keep saying to him, I was like, you are brilliant to have around in a pandemic. Who knew, you know, the things you get to know about each other. He's been amazing. He really has. And I don't know, maybe it's because I like the control thing. I like to do the schooling with them as much as I can, but I need him to do it maybe once a week because I lose my patience with it. And he's great. He's doing the majority of the cooking. As you can tell, he's painting the shed, doing the gardening.
Okay, no, but tell us about that, because for people who don't follow you on Instagram, you have been playing a blinder. Like, we're seeing a whole different side of this incredible, you know, national sports star. And then he's there painting the shed and you're just like, sneaking up on him with the camera, or he's building a bench in the car. The poor fella.
Very helpful.
But he's doing everything, isn't he?
You know, I think as well, you see, Brian's not working at the moment. So neither of us are, like, both of what we do, you know, he's doing a bit and he's got things going on, but it's not to the extent that he normally would be. And he travels a lot. And as well, there's no rugby on. So there's, you know, his life is very different. And he's probably like, he needs a project and stuff to do. So he's going out and doing the stuff.
And you were making a documentary about it,
yeah,
or something.
I'm very busy sitting back and watching it. I'm wrecked. But there has
somebody been... think of Amy.
Guys, Jen, I know you've got like 700 kids, but I'm just really tired taking pictures of my husband doing loads of stuff. we moved house last year, and like most people who move house, we were not on top of it. There was a room of boxes. We hadn't put up the pictures. So we've done that. We're doing that. I don't know if you're meant to just go straight into a wall without a roll plug, but that's what's happening. So would we say we're qualified to paint shit? No, but listen, he's doing it and it's getting done. And it's just kind of, you know, busying yourself and keeping busy. But no, he's great. And he's very calm in all of this. Actually, he's a good man to have in that. He's very emotionally measured, which is good to have.
Excellent. Well,
married to an actress.
Amy, there's somebody called Valerie who lives very close to you. And she's wondering, can you send him round, like at a social distance, to do a few chores?
I get really worried if people say that, because we met Richard Cooper the other day out for a walk. We did a loaf very far away. And I was like, was I talking about you? I didn't realise you lived so far. And he goes, yeah, yeah. We heard you over the wall the other day. Giving out.
Oh, no.
Where Brian was like shouting at the kids. So I always get nervous when people go, someone lives around the corner from you. And you're like, get inside now.
I am in not too far away from your in-laws in Clontarf, North Strand. Yeah. And our houses are all on top of each other. And honestly, now I have the window open all the time and I am going, yeah, what are you doing? You know, and it's just like, ah. And then he's changed your voice to make it sound like, no, I do not shout at my children. Oh, it's terrible.
I know. And when we just got the dog, I'd say my neighbours were like, please make her shut up, because all during the day, because it's the weather so lovely and the back doors are open and you're like, get it, Billy, and then I go out at night and when I'm trying to get the dog to do a wee, I then change the tone and be like, come on, Phoebe, do a wee, and so she's like, I'm actually going to kill her. I think there was one night I was outside in the garden for 20 minutes with this really annoying high pitch, you know, that dogs respond to, and it was like, good girl, come on, and they're like, shut up. So anyway, yeah, we'll all get to know each other a lot better. But we're all on the same.
We will. Well, just if he's not doing anything and he's finished all the bench making that he's doing, just send around to Valerie's.
I will, Valerie, I will.
And what about the kids? Because it's very difficult and challenging. You know, this idea of homeschooling, we're not homeschoolers. We're distance learning teachers at best. And it differs from school to school. I mean, I think loads of teachers are doing an amazing job and I think it's really hard for them. But it's tricky, isn't it? Also being a teacher at this time, you know.
Yeah, and you know, initially, novelty is the wrong word, but I was like, oh no, of course you can do this. And that's before the kind of the incremental and, I don't know, the rolling kind of chore of it does build. And I think it does build, even though sometimes when you've done X amount of weeks, you're like, isn't it great that we've done X amount of weeks? But then you have the weight of that as well. And you're like, I'm so sick of myself giving out. And I thought I'd have more patience. It's not like I'm doing a huge amount. I've got a junior infant and a first classer. But it's even small things like, you know, there's a maths thing now where the school, like, you know, that it's a different system of carrying the one for the double addition. And I'm like, what do you mean there's another way to do it? And you're not carrying the one. I don't know how to not carry the one.
You're doing it like a different way. I was doing long division with them and I'm really bad at maths. And I was like, look, I think I got this. And then I did it and they were like, Mom, that's not what we do. I don't know what you were talking about.
Do they still do the box, the upside down shoe box?
Yeah, but they do something different. And I just, at that point then, I just couldn't, I could go no further with it. I just had to leave it then.
No, and that's the thing. And look, you know, it is really tricky. And I think the longer it goes on, it is hard. And I mean, it must be harder for older students and the leaving. So my heart is breaking for all of those. And you know, the amount of study and everything and hard work and the worry and the unknown and the unknown. I think for my kids, I think it is. I think, you know, that age, it's just, it's the crack of the classroom. And I think that I feel really sorry for them that they're missing that. And even my little fella Billy, I feel really sad that he never really got junior infants. I'm like, oh, but listen, it is the way it is. They're doing a Zoom this week and they get to see their little pals and stuff like that. But it's, you know, it's just us all just trying to adjust. But I'm definitely no homeschooler. And I don't know how people, Jen, how do you do so many kids? I've only got two. And I'm like this.
She hides in her car a lot. That's what I'm hearing.
I used to do that, hiding in the car. That's the only place I used to learn lines, is hiding in my car. I used to love it. I'd be like, bye.
Somebody has asked about your love of shoes, Amy, because you have a line, it's called Bourbon, right?
Yeah.
And somebody wants to know where your love of shoes came from and how you got into that.
Do you know, it's a funny thing. When I think back to my love of clothes and fashion, shoes was probably the last one, because when you had disposable income, especially in my 20s living in London with not much money, you know, just working in restaurants and being an out of work actor, it was always buying a new top. That was the only thing I spent, you know, it was the, oh yeah, you have a new black top for Saturday night. So it was, I would never really spend money on shoes. That was the last thing. And I think my love of shoes grew and I felt more of a grown up in the world. And I started to have my own money and my own, I guess, income. And I was like, ooh, and that felt kind of something special that I could dress up an outfit. And then it was actually Tommy Bow, who works with the guys, said it to me years ago. He was like, oh, these guys I work with are really interested in talking to you about shoes. I mean, fashion was always in my head and my house and my heart. And my dad was a fashion designer. So, but it was never really shoes. And then I felt like it was brought to me, and then it's run away with itself in those shoes. And now I have too many shoes. And well, ask everyone in this house how I
am. Well, somebody is your friend here, because Michelle is saying that please stop advertising your shoes on Instagram, because she keeps buying them, especially some gold ankle boots or something.
Oh, so
will you stop? Yeah. Will you stop?
A few weeks ago.
You need to save our money, not be spending. Like, we don't know what's around
the corner. You know, the plus side is, with all these craft things that we have to make in the house, you know, they were like, so get a shoebox. I'm like, yes, yes, I have a shoebox to make the doll's house. I have a million shoeboxes.
Okay, someone else has asked you about writing, because as well as all the other many things to do, and you've that brilliant TV series Finding Joy, which thankfully had wrapped before all this happened, but are you doing any more writing, and is this, are you going to have a book out of this pandemic, do you think?
Well, like, it's funny because, you know, you see so many of the things, and I agree with all of them, where it's like, we shouldn't be under pressure to create. And like, there's people who've got their jobs and still have to fulfill, you know, the commitments. And then there's people who are out of work and don't want to be out of work. And then there's probably people like me who fall in the middle that you could maybe be doing something. So I was like, but I don't want to right now, because I'm just worrying about myself and the state of the world. But it's funny because, you know, the whole thing of people going, you don't have to learn a new language and you don't have to write a book. But actually, when you do write books, maybe you should write a book. Yeah. But I don't know. Listen, and I'm so fascinated with other people's creative processes. I love asking other writers how they write, because I always kind of slip into, well, it's not the right time because, you know, I've just had a baby, or you know, I'm working on something else and I can't. So I always kind of have that, I don't want to. But do you know what? Writing for me is such a joy, because an escapism, I use that kind of lightly, and not that I'm like dying to escape from my life, but I love escaping into my imagination. And it means when I'm there, I'm not dealing with the rest of the world, and which is quite nice right now because it's not really pleasant out there. And do you know, my line of work is, it's either really, really busy, and up to Christmas we were filming and it was full on, and I was dying for a break, and we finished the edit. So this was going to be kind of my time off, that I was going to be at home. But you know, when it's extended and you don't know, I do like having a project. So the idea of maybe starting something. And the good thing is, well, I can only really write for, I don't know about you, Roisin, but well, you can say this too, like all your editors in the Irish Times, I can only really write for 2 hours a day.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, no, I should be writing more. We'll see. I mean, at the same time, I don't know how creative I feel. I don't know how unless it was something completely different, how any characters could exist in a world where the things aren't happening right now. But I won't put any pressure on myself. I'm not under any pressure. Yeah. Maybe that'd be good if I was. But I feel like it might be good exercise for my brain to actually slip into that and play, because I really enjoy it as well. So maybe even an hour or two a day, I might start.
Well, speaking of other kinds of work, there's been a comment here that people really enjoyed you in the clinic and striking out, which I really loved as well.
Yeah.
And so is there any more possibility? You've got Finding Joy, which again, there's been lots of praise for as well on here and everywhere else. Is there any more sort of like striking out clinic things in the pipeline, you think?
Clinic. It's funny. Sometimes people do say, is the clinic coming back? I'm like, guys, that was not, we finished filming that 12 years ago. It would be very fun to do a clinic reunion episode. But no. And then striking out, I don't know. And look, who knows with these things, and they can come back. But, you know, Finding Joy was such a different thing for me, because the others, I was an actor, and so I didn't have the process before, middle, during, after. You're there on set and you give your all, but that's it. Whereas the process of Finding Joy has taken up the last 2 years of my life. And I'd never written for TV before, so that was, you know, that was jumping off a precipice that I didn't even know what I was jumping into. And it was a learning curve, but it was a really lovely learning curve, because it was comedy as well, which I was like,
you're okay. Such a brilliant comic actress though. I mean, you know, your comedy sketch series,
Your Bad Self.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone remembers, does anyone remember watching that? It was so funny. And it's not, we don't have enough of that, I think, on Irish television, of just those sketches and comedy in that way.
I love sketch comedy. I absolutely love it. And I remember the first time, I don't know how old I would have been. I would have been young. The first time I ever saw Smack the Pony, and as well because it was women, I was like,
yeah,
I was actually, and because I lived with two, I have two brothers, and I was a kind of a girly tomboy. I was always girly, but I loved the A-team. I loved wrestling with my brothers. I loved all those things because I kind of had to be like, you know, I had an older brother and a younger brother, and I was sandwiched in the middle. But I watched a lot of shows that we could kind of all watch. I didn't watch too many, girly shows. I don't know. Maybe when I was a teenager, I did. But I remember the first time I saw Smack the Pony, I was like, that was a revelation to me. Yeah. And I was like, there was just women being filthy and rude and brilliant. And
talking about girth.
But there's things I still quote from that, like, would you like a lizard? Nobody has no idea what I'm talking about. And I'm just like, oh. But yeah, I used to watch a lot of comedy with my older brother, Mark. There's only a year and a half between us. And we used to watch a lot of comedy shows together then. And he loved Smack the Pony as well. And it just started. And I love sketch comedy. I love all types of comedy, but I just love really like clever, succinct storytelling where it's just the gag, boom, done. And then I feel like you can be bolder then because you've only got, you know, 2 to 3 minutes to tell your story. So you can really bring it home.
You are listening to The Women's Podcast, brought to you by Green and Black's Organic Chocolate. Chocolate to savour.
Well, in a few minutes, we're going to open it up to questions, so everyone have them ready. But I'm really interested to ask you about your Jewish heritage, Amy, because I know it's something you're really proud of. And Huberman is such an unusual name. And some people might not know that your dad was Jewish and your mother was Irish Catholic. But could you talk to us a little bit about growing up in that kind of an environment where you've got these two very important, very different cultures and living in Ireland, which was the predominantly Catholic one?
Yeah. Do you know what? It affected more of their generation rather than mine. I mean, I was always aware of it. And I always knew that it felt like something other. And I was really proud of that. And that's, I mean, I haven't changed my name and I don't want to. I feel really protective of it. I think I'm really Huberman, as far as I know, in Ireland, the only female Huberman, because my mum is a married Huberman. But I think I'm the only Huberman in here, because I don't think there's others. I know our cousins are maybe the only ones in the UK. But I'm really proud of my dad and I'm really proud of his heritage. And I mean, they would have seen it more because they found it difficult to find a priest that would marry them and it affected them more. Whereas, you know, I went to a Catholic junior school and I went to, you know, a Catholic senior school. But for me, religion was never particularly a big thing in my life personally. I've been probably spiritual along the way, but I never really identified massively, you know, in a religious way. My mother is quite religious and my dad isn't. But I guess culturally for him, Judaism was a different thing rather than, you know, a religious practicing thing. But yeah, and we went on a gorgeous, really special journey. When I lived in London, my dad joined me in London one weekend and I met my cousin Adam. And I met when I moved to London, I met so many more of my extended family. And then we just decided one day, Adam Huberman, a cousin of mine, runs trips to Auschwitz, and we all went together. And my uncle Alf, who's my dad's brother, served in World War II as a rear gunner. So he is now, my uncle, like my dad is 80, nearly 83, and my uncle is 96. So it's incredible even sharing those stories of somebody who has lived through all of that. But it was a very emotional journey for them, for him particularly, and my dad, and we all went over together and shared that experience. And it was devastating, and it was probably the biggest learning curve I've had as an adult in my 20s, going, oh god, you know, it was, again, in Ireland, it was something that was very, you know, distant, my whole, the lineage of everything. And I knew as much as I did know, but it was an incredibly heartbreaking day that we all went together. But it was very special that we went together.
Amy, is it important then that your children know about your Jewish heritage, and is that something you talk about with them?
Yeah, and actually, you know, Sadie is a Hebrew name originally.
Yeah,
I love that. I love that connection, and they do know, and it's something that, you know, the older they get, and they're in a Church of Ireland school. They're not in a Catholic school, so I think for me, I don't know, the inclusion of so many different religions and nationalities and everything else, I think is very important to me. It was important for my family, and it was important to my dad to be accepted. It's been a whole other community that we've kind of been welcomed into, and I'm all on for that, and I'm learning a lot as I go along.
Well, it is the 400th. The 400th anniversary of the Women's Podcast. That would be really
so well
cryogenically like frozen in my kitchen. But it's the 400th episode, and Kira has asked a very good question. Yeah, 400 more years, says Kira. Kira has asked about the women that you admire. Who are the women that you look up to, whether it's in politics or entertainment or wherever?
Oh my God. Like, it's so hard to pinpoint any, because it can be my girlfriends, like the kindness of my friends, my mum and my granny, And I only really had one grandparent that I knew very well. And the more I know about her, like, I was like, God, she was such a formidable woman for her time. And she kind of, you know, she made her own rules, which was kind of unheard of at the time. And I love hearing stories about my granny, and everyone goes, oh God, you know, Mae Morris, you know, people were afraid of her in Wexford 10. I'm like, what, Mae? And she, you know, so it can be the small things like that. On a bigger scale, I'm really inspired by women telling their stories and having no fear. That's something that I try and practice, is stop being so afraid of outer, you know, of the voices, because I think it alters your creative sense and your creative voice. So you kind of have to block that out as much as you can.
Amy, because I think you're in a difficult position, because when you're someone in the public eye, and as much as you're kind of, there's a certain girl next door type of vibe to you as well, but you're also, you know, out there doing your work, and there's expectations around that. And it's interesting to hear you talk about fear, because I imagine it must be difficult. Like, everything you say is going to be, you know, amplified, and people are going to make more of it. And so it must make you censor yourself a little bit sometimes.
I don't think so anymore. I think it did at a point.
You think aging helped with that, getting older? I'm not saying you've aged. That's terrible. You're still gorgeous and so beautiful.
This is your 400th anniversary.
Yeah, exactly. Let's keep that theme going. But you know what I mean? Do you think getting older helps with that?
I think getting older helps with that. I also think reaching a point. I had a moment. I had this really, like, it was a monumental moment for me with how my brain works, because I am a people pleaser. I always have been. And I really try and practice not doing that. And I can have like flares where I'm going, I'm not afraid to in any way if I feel strongly about it. But I also think there's a saturation point where I cannot expend that amount of giving a fuck. I can't do it. And like, you know, if I'm not purposely going out of my way to hurt somebody, or these, you have to own your own opinion. And also, it is creatively stifling if you feel that you have to keep this, and this. You know, after the clinic and striking out, and we did finally join that, I thought that was, you know, some people might have been like, that was so bold, and it wasn't striking out, and suddenly you have to answer and tick all boxes all at the same time. And I did have a moment. There was a review that we had in, I can't remember, it wasn't the Irish Times.
No, thank God.
No. But listen, if you do, and that's just part of it.
Yeah.
Good or bad. But no, there was somebody who really was needling at me. It was very, it was personal. I didn't like the show, and that's fine. That's absolutely fine. But I kind of had this, like, again, I had a moment of going, and I kind of got lost in that moment of the fear of this, and I felt vulnerable and exposed because of this, and it was so personal, the show of mine. Mm. And I think after that, I was just like, okay, I am probably going to be dead in 40 years if I'm lucky. I am doing a job that I feel I should, I'm so grateful that I get to do. I get to write TV and do TV. I can never please everybody. I can, and if I didn't write that show because it might offend X, Y, and Z, then you're just a diluted version of yourself for the rest of your life, afraid to say or do anything. So I think definitely the last few years have been formative in just going, like, at the same time, I don't seek out, I don't enjoy kind of like lengthy debate over stuff, because I feel like I don't have the personal, the energy or the headspace to kind of deal with too much of that. So I kind of measure that, temper that as much as I can. But for the most part, I just don't want to have to apologize for any of that anymore.
And you shouldn't have to apologize. And we're not about apologizing on the Women's Podcast. No! We that's might apologize. No, we're not apologizing. Years later, we're not apologizing for nothing.
No. And it's such a nice thing to like, sorry.
Sour, sir.
The whiskey's like, yeah, I'm on the rosé. We're not apologizing.
No.
That's like an episode in series.
Okay, I'm going to open it up now. This is very exciting. So Some of you are very clever and have managed to find the blue hand. And if you want to find it, you go to manage participants and you find yourself and you put your hand up. You put your blue hand up. So I'm going to start with Anne Ellis.
Well, I just love Amy's shoes. I just wonder, it's a very simple question. I was looking at them in Meanie's shoe shop in Carrick-on-Shore today.
Yeah.
Nice blog there. And they were fabulous. And I'm just wondering, where do you get your inspiration for your shoes, Amy?
Again, it's like, it's funny with all things. I think it's good to keep it fluid and open. And because, again, look, they're seasonal and year on year styles change. The guys I do with have a good handle on things because I'm like, how do you know that yellow is the color? Because I don't know those. And I'm like, but who's the person that tells you that? Who's the person that decides to tell Victoria Beckham and blah, blah, blah? I know I will never understand that yellow is the color. But then it trickles down. And like, I guess for me, it's just like, what would I wear? Would I wear that? And sometimes it takes my brain a while. If they're like, what do you think of the idea of this? And I'm like, no, that's horrific. And then I've thought about it for a week. And I'm like, I love them. Print. go. And then sometimes we'll draw stuff together. Sometimes I love really high shoes and they always push back at me with that. They're like, not many people wear as high shoes as you. So we'll have a compromise and I'm like, look, we need three or four pairs that will be that. I love metallics. I love bright colors, but then I love a simple pair of gold or nude shoes. So we have a wide range and it's just because we've got quite a big, like a high numbers collection, we do two a year, we can kind of have fun with it. I think if we had to have a smaller little number, like six or seven, you'd probably have to choose really carefully what ones you were going to like chop out. But we do have fun with it. And I love all the runner stuff because I'm a runner's girl myself. So we have fun with those. But I don't know where my inspiration, probably looking through Instagram or magazines or seeing what's on the runway, because all that stuff does filter down to high street stuff as well.
And I hope that's answered your question. There was a lot of shoe talk there. Now I'm going to go to Niamh O'Carroll. So Niamh, I hope you're ready with your question because I'm unmuting you now. Niamh, what's the story?
Absolutely. Amy, what's the boldest thing that you've ever done?
Great question, Niamh.
Oh my God. The boldest thing. Oh, Jesus. I always go back to kids stuff where that was where I felt like I wouldn't feel like I wouldn't, again, don't have to apologize anymore, Niamh. Like bold, oh God, you've caught me off the hop there. When I think of bold, I think of being a child and like, I don't know, raiding the dinner or the dessert that your parents had kept for the...
Did you ever bunk off school?
Mm-hmm.
I was a bit of a nerd in school. And I like, do you know what? If I could go back, I would have done more bold things.
Retrospective bunking off. I know what you mean. Yeah.
This is one of the boldest things that got for me when I was a kid. I was too good as a young kid. I remember I was obsessed with Neighbours and Scott and Charlene. When I mean it was my life, they were my world. And I was so nervous about bunking off. My mom was quite strict back in her time. And I was like, I was so consumed with Kylie and Jason, Scott and Charlene getting married and Neighbours that I was like, I am getting off school that day so I can watch it at 1:30 and 5:30.
Oh.
That was as bold as I got when I was a kid. Okay. But as an adult, I don't know if I would tell you my boldest thing.
Yeah, good idea. Bold. Don't apologize, but also don't overshare when it's going to
come back by body. Too much rosé, yeah.
So, Niamh, thank you very much. I hope that was satisfactory. She was
probably not
really that bold, but maybe she's bold now, but she won't tell us. That's just the way it is. Okay, well, I come to Angela Feeney. I hope she has her question ready.
Hi, Roisin. Hi, Amy. I'm really enjoying this.
Oh, great. Well, I'm really enjoying it too. I have to say, this is brilliant.
I'm living in Maynooth, you know, and I'm just wondering, the connection is, have you been watching Normal People? Because, you know, I live in Maynooth. It's one of our own here, so.
Have I been watching?
Brilliant.
I don't know which I'm more obsessed with, Connell's chain or Marianne's nose. She's got the most gorgeous nose.
Yeah.
Anyway, also their acting skills and the writing and everything. But I was, so I have to say, I have a dirty little secret. I think I'm ahead of all of you because I was sent a link. And I'm
send me the link, Amy. Send me the link.
So, you know, it was one of those things. It was BBC, like, don't ever say, or we will come. And I'm so bad with computer stuff. I probably would literally send it back to them, BCC the BBC, going, promise I won't to anyone. But I was sent a link through the producers, and I like, it is just the most gorgeous TV. And I keep every night, like, because we finished watching Ozark, myself and Brian, and then we'd watch Tiger King and all that kind of stuff. We need to find something else. And I'm like, oh, I'm so wrecked. And I go to bed, and then when I go to bed, I'm like, but you know what? While I'm here, I might just watch Normal People. He hasn't watched it, but it's just so glorious. So I've got two episodes left, and I'm nearly sad. I wish it wasn't over. Do you know what I'm also loving about it? I love that it's half-hour drama.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, and it's so deliciously slow
sexy.
And a storytelling.
Sorry.
That you don't, yeah, yes. I mean, it's very sexy.
Sorry.
It is very sexy.
I mean, you started it with all the things.
The tools and the girls.
Hot tools.
Hot tools. But do you know what? It's so lovely because I think if it was an hour, I think, like, I love how slow it is because you're not, so often when you're watching TV, I think, you know, it's always talked about pace. And of course,
yeah,
it's usually written and paced and everything. But I love that the scenes are allowed to sit down and sit in and are given room to breathe. And that's what's so glorious, because it's so beautifully written, shot and acted, that no second is lingering too long, even though you have a sense of the actual, their feeling with each other in the room, which is so hard to get, but it's just gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous.
Well, listen, I could talk about Normal People for a long time. We had a bit of a chat on the women's podcast last week, but it's just, I agree with everything you've said. It's fantastic. We're going to go to Elizabeth Goldrick now. If you have a question for Amy, Elizabeth, are you there?
Hello, is it me?
Hi, it is you. Hey, in your lovely stripy yellow top. And who's with you?
Her mammy.
My mum is Carmel.
Okay, Carmel and Elizabeth.
Amy, our question is quite serious. I don't have kids, but we have my nephews, and like, they're 10 and 8. And like, we don't really know how much to ask them about like what they're understanding at the moment. But like, what are you telling your kids, or how are they taking it? Or
I have to say, I don't, if I'm listening to the radio, I'll turn the news off when it's the news hour, because they're very young. Like, I have a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old. And I think it's, you know, for their little worlds, I don't want them to worry. They know that it's, I mean, they know there's the coronavirus. They cannot, my daughter Sadie is like, I hate that word.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I know. But they're not watching news. They're not listening to news. All I can say to them is, because my daughter, and I get it as well, she's like, people are saying this is going to go on for months and months. And I think it's the time frame of that. And I understand that as well. So just, look, it's going to be over. It's going to be over. It's not going to last. I know it's so annoying, but let's just do every day. And the times when they get frustrated or miss things, you know, we just kind of brush away. So look, it is annoying and it is frustrating, but it won't last, and we'll be back doing our things. So yeah. And you know, I think the sense of it, obviously, my two don't get, and the global scale of it, and it just, you know, but they've adapted quite well. They're missing their friends and they're missing school, but I would not have the news on in front of them, and they know that a bit of it, and they kind of opt out of it as well. They're like, I can hear, we can hear. So yeah, we just trying to tell them that it'll all be over, and I think that kind of gives them a little bit of sense of perspective and hope.
I hope that's okay, Elizabeth and Carmel. Is that all right?
Okay, good advice. Take care.
Our grandchildren don't really notice what's going on.
Yeah.
They live nearby, they cycle by, and I hear their mammy whispering, say we miss you, Grandma.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, then, we miss you.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, I want to rattle through loads more because I know there's lots of you with your blue hands up here. Karen Fort, are you there? Are you ready to ask your question?
Hi, Amy. My question is, what would be the first thing you do after lockdown? What are you missing?
I mean, it has to be going and having a proper conversation with my mum and my dad and sitting with them. That's been so hard. My dad is not very well at the moment. And
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. And, you know, he's 83. He's got a lot of health issues. He's got Parkinson's. And he was in hospital at the very beginning of this. But he's I think he's kind of confused and frustrated. And, you know, he's like, this feels like wasted time, which is really breaks my heart a little bit. So I can't wait to just go up and, you know, go into his room and sort out the Netflix for him, or, you know, organize the stuff, or just, it's just that the contact, and to be in my mum's house or her to be in our house. That's the main thing. That is really the main thing. It's even the difference of being in the cinema rather than watching something on TV, that shared human experience.
Absolutely.
You can't replicate that. And even that sense of, and you know, it feels so false and labored when you go down to the supermarket, because we all have to say, you know, smile apologetically at each other and wave, where just the interaction, and just so that it's not so conscious and considered, that we can kind of, you know, relax with all of that. I'm really looking forward to all of that.
Amy, I want to know what kind of books you read. But what books do you like, and what are you reading at the moment?
So you should see my bedstand, because I'm trying to read loads of kids' books, because I've kind of marinating an idea for something like that. So, and it's perfect for my attention span late at night. So I'm reading a chapter meant for a 9-year-old. I'm like, perfect. Yeah. Actually, do you know what? I am not the quickest reader. And I got into Audible about a year and a half ago, and that has been a game changer for me. So I'll have a few on the go, and there's times where I can't really concentrate and listen to it. Do you know what, Roisin? I've downloaded only today on your recommendation was Nina's Divi.
It's so funny.
Yeah, and I need that at the moment. So that's what is that one? Things to be grateful for.
Reasons to be cheerful.
Reasons to be cheerful. So yeah. I'm looking forward to that. I love autobiographies, because I find it, I don't have to concentrate as much if it's a fiction narrative that I could just kind of go on and listen to somebody's stories. I'm also have Marion Keyes Grown Ups on the go.
Yay. So
that's fun and funny, and that I can escape into a world that's not grim. I had downloaded two Where the Crawdads Sing.
I'm reading that.
Oh, are you?
Yes.
It was too heavy for me at the moment as well, right. Because I was also watching Ozark. I was like, oh my God. The world is too heavy, and I had just finished Educated, and I was like, okay, I needed to step back from that. So I'm going to go with Nina Stivi, and I'm going to go with Marion for the moment.
Okay.
I'm trying to think what other ones have. I any recommendations and stuff that I've read? I did love Educated. I really, really loved that.
Fantastic book.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for a couple more questions. I don't want to keep you too long. We've got a couple of minutes left. So let me see. Oh, God, there's so many blue hands here. Sarah Quirk, are you ready with a question, Sarah?
Yes. Yeah, I'm ready.
Hey, hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Where are you, Sarah?
I'm over in Rathgar.
Not too far from Amy, then.
Not too far, no.
Can you hear me shouting at my kids in the garden?
Not yet, but listen out.
Okay, good.
No, I'm really enjoying this. Thank you, Roisin and Amy.
Oh, great.
Thanks.
I'm just wondering, I suppose we've really changed the way we're living at the moment. And I'm wondering, Amy, is there any changes that you'd like to see stay when we come back to normal? Or is there things that things you'd like to see if they change, new changes?
Yeah, I mean, look, again, you know, we talk about the crisis that the world is in, and the kind of, and then you bring it to such a like intrinsic personal level, and you're like, what are the things that I can get from this? And I think that's just, I don't think we should beat ourselves up about that, because it's personal to each one of us. And I think that I was only thinking about it today, and you know what, life does go back to normal. Hopefully it will sooner rather than later, and we will get caught up in our lives. But I was definitely on the hamster wheel of adrenaline, I think, for it was probably unsustainable, and nobody's fault except mine. And I'd be like, take it on. And a part of me nearly fed on that adrenaline a little bit. Mm-hmm. And now I don't have my distractions. I don't have the extra noise. And once you pair that all back, it's actually quite nice. So, everything else in my own head is enough, even though I'm doing absolutely nothing productive. I'm not contributing to anything creatively, artistically, anything. I'm making shit banana bread. But you know what? It's not goal orientated, which is a different way that I haven't kind of, you know, lived in a while. And sometimes all those goals are the stuff, the pressure that you put on yourself. But I think there's a lot to, there's so much good in that, to let, you know, and it's the small things of just going, I don't have time. And that's a horrible way to feel like you're constantly living. So do you know what? Maybe to slow down a little bit. And it's a tough lesson to learn. And it's horrible to think that that's a byproduct of something that's going ongoing, that's so horrifically scary. And there's just, you know, the reality of it. But, you know, all we can do is have our own personal experience in it. So I think in that maybe that's it. Whatever I said 2 minutes ago, I can't really remember.
Then there's B. Gorman here. B. Gorman.
How are you?
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
You've got the last question of the night before my light completely fails me.
Amy, and I know the other, the previous speaker, Sarah, probably touched on it. What is the most important thing that you learn from lockdown when you come out the other side, when we all come out the other side?
I think it is just that, again, is the sense of time. And, your perception of time, how quick time feels like it's sometimes going and how slowly. And I'm a little bit obsessed by time sometimes as well, where I'm like, oh, God, the kids are another year older and we've lost that and we've lost this. Because all I can do at the moment is be in every day. I can't think about yesterday, because actually the weight sometimes of the accumulative weeks feels very heavy. And the thought of what's ahead is so unknown. That is, the way kids live in the now and the way we're told to live in the now, I'm actually really practicing that because I can't bear to do anything else. I can look ahead in an optimistic way and go, okay, once we jump over all of that, we'll be back to that. But I can't think about next week and the day to day of every day of next week. So I think it is just I have this lovely little thing I got in New York before I got home. I bet you I won't forget it now. And it's a famous quote by somebody, I don't even remember who it was, that when you walk, arrive with every step. And I think it's the sense of that. And I will try not to lose that, because it's the thing of just not running and racing to get to the thing, get the done thing, because,
yeah,
you know, you're missing the small things, that, you know, the big moments in the little things. And often that's so much of what this is. And of course, we're not all going to come out of, being martyrs and having, this, awakening. But I think in some level, it's going to have to have affected us all. And that level of fear and difference of how we live. And I think if we do try and bring something, or just the relief that we're not in anymore, whatever it is, or however, you bring it to affect your life. But I think it is hopefully just being more in the now, which is the only way we can really live at the moment.
Amy, that is so lovely. And there's some really gorgeous comments coming from everybody here. I really appreciate it. You've been absolutely, I feel quite moved just reading the comments at the end. People are really appreciating the evening, Amy. I think someone's saying it was that monk Thich Nhat Hanh, I won't pronounce it right, who said what you said,
you
arrived
with
every step. And also people are just feeling that the hour flew really fast, which I think they did as well. I'm very bad at finding these comments, but there were some lovely ones. I'm going to find a really nice one to end on. Just everyone's really, it was like having a friend over for a chat.
Aww.
Stay safe and stay well, everyone. And I'd like to echo that. Thank you so much. It's been wonderful. Will you say hi to Bod the Baker for us as well?
I will, of course. He's probably soaking his sultanas, as they say.
Well, oh God, let's not go there.
Let's not go there.
You'll start talking about his nuts next, Amy. Dinner will be really in trouble. Anyway, that's a good way to end it. I think we need to stop now.
Yeah,
thank you, everyone. You're amazing. And Amy, you're brilliant. You're such a brilliant woman. We really appreciate it. Bye, everyone.
Stay safe.
See you. Bye.
And that's it for today. Our 400th episode done and dusted. Thanks to Amy Huberman, who is just fantastic. And remember, do go to Instagram at IT Women's Podcast. Follow us, like us, and tag 3 friends. And you could be in with a chance to win a load of chocolate from our sponsors, Green and Blacks. Remember, you can subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Spotify, Acast, and all good podcast apps. And if you want to get in touch, we're on Twitter and Facebook at IT Women's Podcast, or email us on thewomenspodcast@irishtimes.com. The podcast is produced by me, Roisin Ingle, and by Suzanne Brennan, with JJ Vernon on sound. Until next time, stay safe, and thank you very much for listening all these years.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details. Thank you.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.